Welcome, friends, and thank you for checking out this episode of the Indie Lounge presented by the DDT Archives. Greg here, and on behalf of Chris and I, we hope everyone is staying safe out there during these difficult times. We also hope that we can provide a few minutes of solace for you today, and it all starts with our guest, Mario Baccara. We've been fans of his for a long time, dating back to his days in the New Jersey promotion, ECPW. Mario talks his training in OVW, his time in Impact, plus some other great stories from the road. If you like what you hear, don't forget to support the show however you can. The best way to do so is subscribing to the podcast on iTunes and giving us that 5-star rating we all know and love. We have some great content coming at you this week, including our interview with Blanco Loco on Friday. On Wednesday on the flagship show, we will dive into a classic rivalry between Sting and the Great Muta, and we will do a watch-along for a match that they had in 1989. We can't thank you enough for hanging with us in the Indie Lounge and the DDT Archives. Follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at DDT Archives. Follow Chris at Chris_DDTHSLB. Subscribe and rate us wherever you listen. And without further ado, here's Mario as we catch him mid-story talking about a match he had with another New Jersey legend, Red Hot Russ.
That was the only match we had ever. Gino used to give us ratings on matches and stuff, and that was the only time he ever rated a match at a 10. Like, he put a 10 on the board and he circled it like 100 times. And we were like, oh, great, he's going to make one episode of just that match. And then they chopped it up and they made it like 15 minutes, and we were like, oh, bullshit.
That sucks.
Yeah, we were like, that's messed up. So we were like, I don't even want to watch it. So if you can't watch the full thing, I don't want to watch it.
That was a good one. That was probably the best match we saw in Lake Hiawatha ever.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, that one. Even me and Russ, we were like, man, it was just nuts. We finished that match with the first, Gino showed us that koala pin, like, early when we started training, and then we ended up using it as the finish for that match.
Now, you guys were a tag team for a long time, too, weren't
you?
Yeah,
like 2 years we were a tag team. That was like the whole point, is like, we can team up just so we can split up and work each other. And then we ended up staying as a tag team for like 2 years or something like that.
It's fun. I miss my brother wrestling.
I was always, especially too, because he had the name Mario, because I was like, I'm like, I wish I used my real name. He was Mario, and I was like, oh, see, it works good. I'm like, I like it. Works out pretty good.
Yeah,
I remember him and his partner. What was it, Ace?
Ace Wild.
Yep,
yeah.
Ace Wild.
Yeah. With the hardest version of the Gambler song ever.
Yeah.
Just pretty non-traditional.
Yeah. It was a good song. I forget which one it was, but I remember we always liked
it. It was very good.
Yeah.
So talk us through those emotions with that match with Russ.
It was, I wasn't leaving because I got a job or anything like that. I was leaving because I was trying to. Like, I had gone to OVW tryout camps. I went to one a year earlier. And then they were like, you know, you have a lot of potential, but, you know, like, your body sucks and you're still young and there's all these things that, you know, you have a good base, but you need to work on stuff. So I tried to apply for the next one. The next one, they wouldn't let me come down because they were like, well, you just did the last camp, so like, you have to wait. So I was like, all right. So I waited until the next one, which was a whole year later, and then I came down and they were like, well, you did everything you needed to do to get better. They're like, your body still sucks, but, you know, they were like, it was they said, but you definitely got better. So they were like, you can, you know, if you want to come down and get into the intermediate class with Rip Rogers, you'll bypass the beginner's class and then you can start with him. So basically, I was just going down there to give it a shot. And everybody thought I was signed. Because I just did like a Sunday Night Heat thing too, like before that. I did a wrestle match with Rob Conway. And I did like, we did a couple of like extra work things because I think Dreamer was in charge at the time. And we did like we did a workout with Kali before they brought him in. Like they wanted to take a look at him. So a couple of guys got offered a shot to go up there. So we went up to Stanford and we worked out with Kali before they signed him. And he walked out of the limo and we were like, well, he's got a job. We were like, you don't even have to try out. We were like, okay. But so that was how I ended up going down there. But then once I was down there, you realize that people were just moving down there and they were paying for the beginner's class. And so it wasn't like a bypass, really. It was like some people just would move down. They pay for the beginner's class. And then they maybe like a month or two later, they were in the intermediate class. So it was like, but for me, it was just still good that, you know, I wanted the invite. I didn't want to go down without an invite. So the fact that they gave me the invite was a big deal. So,
but, absolutely.
Yeah. So, but that was like, and then, so going into that match too with Russ, it was just like, we were like, this is probably the last time we're going to do this. So we were like, you know, like at the same time too, it's like when you kind of like protect your finishes and things like that. Like I had never had anybody kick out of the frog splash when I was in ECPW. So finally we were like, we got to kick out, you know, like, so we had every fall, so we kicked out of each other's finishers, and then we finished it with that that koala pin that Gino showed us like early on in our career, because it just made sense. And yeah, that was like one of my favorite matches, like probably of all time. I just haven't even, up to then, it was probably the best match I had. Well, that's a lie. We did a cage match, actually, Russ and I. We did a cage match at, I think it was Men in Arena. I think it was Menon, but me and Russ did a cage match, and that was probably one of my best matches that I had too. I did a cage with Andrew Anderson too, which was really good. That was actually kind of how I got set up with the match with Conway, because Sergeant Slaughter was there and he watched that match and he said that was like one of the best cage matches he'd ever seen. And when I went down for the extra work, he was like, I remember you. And he's like, you want to work with Rob Conway? I was like, sure. So I was like, why not? So, and then Rob was really awesome too. He was just getting into that new character. He was getting away from the La Resistance, and he was doing kind of like a little bit, kind of looked like Buff Bagwell a little bit.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, but he was awesome. He was so appreciative that it went off well, because then he kind of got a little push going from there. So he was like, he's like, you helped me get that. So I was like, hey, man, I'm like, it's all you. But it was just nice to see how, you know, guys were.
You were Mo Sexton when you did the WWF stuff, right?
Yes. Yes. I hated Mo Sexy. I hated it with a passion. I never wanted to be it. And Gino was like, no, that's it. And I'm like, no. It's like when you're picking your name and stuff, you know, everybody, you know, they're like, who do you idolize, and who do you like? And of course, everybody liked Shawn Michaels because he's Shawn Michaels. I mean, it was like, that was the time. And so they were going off like the Heartbreak Kid kind of thing and all this stuff. And when I was younger too, people used to tell me I looked like AJ Styles when I had short hair and stuff, when he was still, you know, young and short hair. And I would do like the leapfrog drop down drop kick spot. And I had no idea that it was the AJ spot. People are like, oh yeah, the AJ spot. And I was like, God damn it. So you were like, well, yeah, whatever. So that's the spot. So what, you know? But that was kind of how they were throwing names around. Mo was always my nickname growing up in high school and stuff. So that's where Mo came from. It was short for Mario. They just cut my name in half and they were like, Mo. So I was like, all right, cool. So that's where that always came from. People still to this day call me Mo. They don't even call me Mario at all. So that was how they kind of combined Mo and like this. And I wanted like a real name. And he was like, no, Mo Sexy. That's it. And I'm like, no, that's not it. And he's like, yeah, yeah, that's it. They're like, that's it. And I'm like, God, you know, like, it was like, all right, whatever. So then I was like, well, the name doesn't matter. But really it did, because you come out with a name like Mo Sexy, you're expecting, you know, you're expecting an over the top kind of character. You know, like one of those arrogant type characters. And I was just like kind of a white meat baby face, you know. I was baby face for the first like 6 years before but when I went down to OVW, I was still a baby face. I'd never really been heel. So I didn't really know how to do it until I got there. Rip Rogers showed me how to be a heel. But that was why eventually I changed it to Sexton, because people already knew me as that name on the independents. And I was tired of going out and the ring announcer would announce my name and people were expecting somebody else. Once the bell rang, they were into it and they were okay. But then they dropped the name and then it was just Mo. But I just couldn't get past that part of it. It was like people too, for the entrance, for the music, for the character. It just didn't make sense. So that was why I shortened or changed it to Sexton, just because it was very similar in sound, but it was a regular name. And that was when I was working at Cyberspace for Billy Firehawk and doing stuff there. And once I did that, it was like, I started getting a little more recognition as like, just, all right, this guy's pretty good. He's a good worker.
Well, you definitely stood out in ECPW. I'll say that hands down. We enjoyed when you were on the card.
Yeah. Thank you for being the first person that we've had since we started doing the interview show that we've seen in person. That's awesome. Absolutely. And you're a Bergen County guy, right?
Originally, I was from Bergen County. Wow. I was born in Passaic Valley Hospital near Westwood, but I lived in New Milford, New Jersey, pretty much my whole life.
Where'd you go to high school?
New Milford High School.
Oh, very, very good. I'm a St. Joe's Montville grad.
Oh, okay.
It's right in our backyard. What's that?
Yeah, St. Joe's Bergen Catholic.
Oh yeah, big time.
They were always, that was the rival, right?
Oh, yeah.
you're getting at him. You're ripping up scores right now.
No, I'm good.
We lost the senior state championship from him.
We lost a lot of good football players to St. Joe's and Bergen Catholic, which is why we ended up not being so great at football.
Yeah, that was the darkest day of my life.
Yeah.
Darkest day of my life was the 98, was our senior year. Chris, you came with me to that game.
I did come to you.
At Giant Stadium, and we had won three straight state titles, and the only one we lost in my 4 years there was against Bergen Catholic at Giant Stadium my senior year. It was the worst day I've ever experienced. Wow,
98. Yeah, that was the year I graduated, too.
Yeah, like it's...
I wrestled that year. I wrestled for like the first 2 years in high school, and they always had me go... I was like 175, and they always made me wrestle like 215 because they needed somebody to bump up and they didn't have weight class. So I would get my ass kicked like all the time, unless it was like, you know, somebody that was just heavy and didn't have, you know, any real experience. But usually it was seniors that were way heavier than me, way stronger than me, and just like beating the tar out of you. So it was like, I didn't wrestle my junior year because I was like, I'm tired of getting beat up.
Jeez.
The senior year, they came up and they were like, no, you're going to wrestle 189. You're going to wrestle your weight class. They said, we have every weight class full except for 189. They said, if you wrestle, because we had like eight freshmen that came up. So they said, if you wrestle, I guarantee you we're going to win the districts. And I was like, no way. And they were like, yeah, seriously. I was like, all right. So I was like, all right, I'll do it. I said, but once we're out of district contention, I said, that's it. They were like, yeah, okay. And we ended up going undefeated that year and we won districts. Which, nice. So I was awesome. Super happy that I did that because it was a great memory. And it was awesome to be a part of that. We were the last... one of the last teams to put numbers up on the board for wrestling. So
it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Our favorite sports bar is in New Milford too. Section 201.
Yep. Right on River Road in Henley.
Yep.
I will take the 30-minute drive to go there any day of the week. I love that place.
It used to be Jersey Boys.
Yep.
It was Jersey Boys and then they changed it. So I haven't really been since it was 201, but it is. It is. I've been in there once before. It's a nice looking bar.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's really nice.
I went there for a draft a couple of years ago. We go to watch Thursday night football every once in a while. It was awesome.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, it's a good place.
So, tell us a little bit more about that time in OVW. What were those classes like? How competitive of a situation was it?
Well, I mean, everybody came down because they wanted a job. You know, like that was the whole point. And, you know, like, where better to be than, like essentially, it's like what NXT is now. You know, it'd be like if you went down, like, you can't walk in and be a walk-in in NXT. But that was kind of the way it was in OVW. And, like, some people could just walk in and you never knew. Like, they throw you on TV and you never know who saw you and somebody would give you a job and then that's it. But at the same time, too, you're already there, so it's like, I'm not going to pay you to be there unless you're ready to go on TV. So it was very competitive in the students because everybody wanted to move up. You know, we all wanted to learn and move up quickly. But in Rip's class, it was just like, I always said that like ECPW and Indies before that was like high school. And then when I got to OVW and Rip's class, it was like college. because it was a whole different dynamic, like, of learning. And like, I had, usually it was like the most experienced guy would kind of lead the way. And when you were in Rip's class, if you were the heel, you led the way. If you were the baby face, you shut up and you listen. So it took me a little adjustment period to figure that out. And I remember one match in particular, we were doing a practice match, and I was the baby face, it was a tag match, and I locked up with the guy, and he backed me up to his corner, and he's kind of clean breaking, and I'm like, I'm stuck in this guy's corner now. I'm like, the heel's behind me, and he's right in front of me. So I gave the heel on the apron a back elbow, and I punched the baby face. And he wasn't expecting it, and I kind of caught him. And Rip rang the bell, and he's like, what the fuck was that? Am I allowed to curse?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah.
Dude, you know where we're from. Come on.
Yeah, I know. It's Jersey, that's it. Everybody's like, you talk Jersey. So I punched him, and he was like, rang the bell. He goes, what the fuck was that? And I'm like, I was fighting out of the corner. And he's like, why? I'm like, he's like, did he tell you to do that? And I was like, no. He's like, then you shut the fuck up and listen. I'm like, okay. And that was it. Like, after that day, I kind of got it. Like, I understood. He goes, if the match sucks, he goes, it's his fault. It's not yours. I said, okay. So eventually I learned how to listen. And then once I kind of got the listening part down, I was like, all right, good. Now I feel comfortable with this. Rip was like, all right, now you're going to be a heel. And I was like, what the fuck? It's like, I just got baby face down. I said, so now he's like, yeah, but if you want to be good, he goes, and if you want to have longevity, he goes, you got to learn how to work both ways. So I was like, all right. So it took me a little bit of time to get comfortable with it. Because for OVW classes, it would be like, he'd call two names, and he would be like, Mario, Serena, your baby face. And he'd be like, Maria, you know, Justin, you guys are heels, and they would lead the way. And it was like 6 minute matches on the fly, no talking, no nothing. I mean, he'd give you maybe a minute if you were lucky. And at that point you were like, all right, that was where I realized, like, the only thing you really needed to call for us was call the cutoff and call the finish. Everything else is kind of, you know, it's like kind of paint by numbers. You know what yep. I mean? Like, the shine belongs to the baby face. The heat belongs to the heel. There's always going to be a comeback. And then whatever the finish is, comeback is like a bump feet. So it was like, I kind of pieced things together. And once I kind of got that, it was like, eventually, he always said too, he goes, Rip said, it's like watching, when you really get wrestling, it's like watching it in black and white on TV. And then once you get it, it's like everything becomes color. And that was exactly how it was. Because I remember we did a match where it was me and Serena Deeb. She was a coach at NXT now, or yep. previously was. Against Maria, which was another female, and Russell Simpson. And we had a match. It was Man Beast. It was Maria and Man Beast. And they both used the spear. I was the heel. Me and Maria were the heels. And Serena and Man Beast were baby faces. And they both used the spear. So I was like, finish his do-si-do double spear. You know, like, so we got him into the corners, boom, shoot him together, do-si-do, boom, double spear. And we had an easy cutoff where he was in a Boston Crab. I came in, crept from behind. Referee didn't see it, threw her over the top rope. Everybody went nuts. And it was like just a simple match. And it was like, that was the day though I got it though. Like, I remember that day specifically because Rip actually sent everybody home after the match because he goes, it ain't going to get much better than that. He's like, so are y'all going to go home right now? And we were like, yes. We were like, because that never happened. So we were like, cool, man. We were like, that's it. So we were all really happy about it. So it was like, but it was just, it said it was a whole different, it was learning to work on the fly, no talking. Like, everybody went 60 minutes at one point. I did a 60 minute match. You know, it was just, it was learning. It was like baptism under fire. Like, you just went in there and go. You made mistakes, and that's how you learned, you know? Everybody really was just hungry to keep moving to get better. And, you know, everybody bettered each other. And we would do hour chain drills. And it was 3 hour practices, 3 to 4 times a week, you know? And then you had TV on Wednesdays that you were supposed to be there for as a student. And, you know, Paul Heyman was in charge of TV at the time down there. So I think it was a time too when CM Punk got signed, Miz was under contract there. Brent Albright had just came up. I think he was Gunner Scott when he came up. Yeah, I mean, there was Deuce and Domino were down there. Cherry was down there. They had just came up. So it was interesting. It was, you know, it was a crazy time with Paul down there too, and then guys like Punk and Miz, and you see how far they've come. It's like,
yeah,
not a bad crop of guys. Bobby Lashley was there, you know, like just it was fun. I enjoyed being down in Louisville. It was a good time.
That's awesome. You mean when you guys spend that much time together, it'd be hard not to, I would imagine.
Yeah, we became like a little family. It was, everybody was, you know, we worked out together, train together, eat together, hang out together. I mean, I was still working full-time job down there. I ended up working at like GNC. I was managing a store. I was waiting tables. I worked in a kitchen. I started bouncing. Like, I did whatever I could to to make money and make ends meet. But
gotcha. Now, how do you prefer working heel, or do you prefer working babyface?
I feel like I'm a better babyface, but I like working heel, man. It's like there's no rules when you're a heel. Like, I mean, there's rules, but it's just different. I feel like I'm a much better babyface, though. I've always been babyface for a long time. I do kind of prefer the babyface side of it, though, just because of the selling aspect. Because sometimes it's hard to make somebody sell the way you want them to sell. Mm-hmm. And selling was always one of my strong points. At least early on, people were like, you got a nice dropkick and you sell good. So I was like, all right, cool. So I was like, I did mostly that in the beginning of the few years. And that's what kind of got me people that wanted to work with me, because they were like, you bump good and sell good. And so I do prefer on the cheering side of it, though. It is nice to have people cheer for you. Sometimes being a heel can be pretty rough out there. People tell you about yourself.
I can imagine.
But it is fun being heel, especially now once I got more into it. I really enjoyed being heel. But I think it really depends on who I'm working with. But I always like to be able to just change with what I needed to do, go both ways.
Now, when you went up to Impact, you went with Fala Ba, right?
Yes.
Did you train him?
No, I didn't train Fala. Fala originally came from, I think it was IWF with Kevin Knight. And I forget somewhere, it's in West Jersey. I think he originally trained there. And then he knew Pat Buck. I'm not sure exactly if it was NYWC that he had been up there or not, but I remember he had come in when we were doing PWS, and that's when they had PWS was doing a lot more character-based stuff as well. And that was when they decided to turn him into like a Yokozuna type character. Mm-hmm. And that was when I think things really changed for him too, was doing that character. And then we ended up really teaming though, because we were at Monster Factory. Danny Cage had invited me to come down for a tournament. I worked with Punisher Martinez, who's Damian Priest now. Mm-hmm. He said I was doing the Croatian character, and he said I want to bring you in and work with Luis Punisher in the finals of the tournament. I was like, all right, cool. And I came down for the tournament, and first match I popped my back out, and then I was hurting pretty bad. And then the second match we kind of made it work, and the second match actually came out better than the first one, but I was still kind of hurt. And then Danny was like, what do you want to do? He's like, well, you know, we can change it. And I was like, no way, man. I was like, this is my first time here too. I'm like, this, I'm setting the tone for what you think of me, you know, like, so if I back out now, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure you're never going to bring me back. So we just sucked it up, and we had a great match with Punisher. I think we ended up going like 20 or 25 minutes for the last match. And Danny was like, you're a stud, bro. He's like, you're a horse. But I'm like, thanks, man. So we just, you know, did what we could do. And then I brought Fala with me down the first time, and Danny loved Fala. And then he was like, you can come down whenever you guys want. And then we came down, and he's like, since we were riding together, he's like, I'm just going to put you in a tag. And we were like, all right. And we teamed together, and then he like put the tag titles on us. And then we were just going out, because it was, you know, the Monster Factory crowd is a lot younger crowd. It's more family friendly and kids and stuff. So, and unfortunately, the ring too there was really stiff. So we didn't want to do anything too crazy. So we kind of were just like doing a lot more character gimmick based stuff. Fala's always a, you know, entertainer anyway. He's always likes to have fun in there. So we would play the circle game during matches and stuff where, you know, you put the hand out in the circle, make people look at it, grab a headlock and people would pop, you know. And Fala would do his roll gimmick where he rolls over people and we were just having fun. And then we needed a finish, so I jumped on his back and I said, what if I jumped on your back and you just splashed him? And he uses it now with TJP on Impact. Yep. They use that same finish. So we were like, people were like, oh, you guys, it looks like Super Mario and Yoshi when you. So we were joking with that. So it was like, we just had fun, man. We just went out there and had fun. And then we were doing that. And I think Abyss was down there one time and he saw us work. And we did a seminar with Bill DeMott too. And Bill loved us, he thought our match was great. We were just, with so much character and stuff, and next thing we know, we get a phone call from Impact from Abyss, and he said they were looking to bring in tag teams, I think, to work the Hardys before they came back to WWE. It's right before the Orlando Mania, where they came back, yeah. And then they were leaving, and we were like, you know, what's going on? Did we come down? And he was like, yeah, just come down. And we knew Jeff Jarrett from the Global Force shows that he came up for PWS with. So it was just like everybody, it's just like all these little things that led up to it happening. And then they brought us in and everybody liked us and they signed us for, you know, 1 year deals and stuff. And, but we were heels on TV and we were like, we really need to be babyface, you know, like we're so babyface, like we're not heel at all. And, we did some house shows with LAX. We had a great match with them, which, I mean, they can have a great match with anybody, but we really had a really good match with them. And that was Jeff Jarrett said. He goes, I think we're going to make you guys babyface. And I was like, please, please make us babyface, you know? And I think then the next set of tapings, Jeff was gone. And it was like, you know, like things just, they were still changing things at Impact. That was the year where everything was still being changed. They were, you know, they were losing money, so they were trying to figure out how to not lose money. So,
and you know, not paying Hogan probably would have been the first way to save money.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of these guys had big contracts too that they were still, you know, obligated to cover. So it was like that was a big deal too, and so they were just trying to figure out ways to, you know, make it cost efficient, which I understand. You know, it's business. At the end of the day, we were like, they're paying us this, and it's like, you know, like, they got to be hemorrhaging money. There's no way that they're paying us this much. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, they got to be. There's no way that they're making money. But
never apologize with somebody else.
Yeah, and then an injury just happened. That was it. I tore my meniscus in a singles match, and that was it. And then it was like, ended up having surgery and things were changing too, though. They put us, they were really trying to, everybody really wanted them to do something with us. And at the same time too, like we were told that we weren't going to be anything more than like a Power and Glory type of team. Like maybe we get a win on a house show, but on TV, we're not going to get one, which I was always like, how do you cap a guy like that? Like off anybody, you know what I mean? Like, how do you label anybody that? In general, you know, I don't think that's just a fair assessment for anybody when they're, you know, like whenever you get anywhere, everybody wants to, you know that there's just opportunity, you know, you want to just be given the opportunities to do stuff. And you know, my body's only, I've been wrestling for 20 years now, so you know, my body's is pretty beat up. You know, I probably shouldn't have even still been going after 2010, but you know, like my body can only take so much. I can't be a punching bag for everybody, which is pretty much what I was. For the most part, I was the bump guy. But I mean, I was grateful for my time in Impact though, because it was validation for 17, 18 years worth of work to finally be able to get signed to a contract from a major company. So I just wish that I wish it would have went more and, you know, went different, but it was the way it is. So I can't, you know, it's nothing I can do about it. But I was happy that Kevin and Fala were teaming and doing stuff and they were babyface. And then you're always like, see, I told you, we should have been babyface. So you're happy for your friends when they're doing stuff at the same time too. It's hard to sit back now and watch them do that when you're like, you know, I should be there too. I was there, you know, and now you're at home and they just stop calling you, you know. But, you know,
all these tough part of it, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, but
how did you come up with the Croatian? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that was pretty much it. It's just, it is what it is. There's not much you can do about it. So you just got to move on.
How did you come up with the Croatian character?
Well, essentially, the funny part is because the name is my real name. You know, Mario Bucara is my real name. And the character in general, honestly, I always tell everybody, I said, it's just my father. Like, the whole, like, the accent is my dad. Like, you know, like, everything is just, like, basically would just imitate my father. And people were like, dude, you imitate him, like, so well. And I was like, yeah. So eventually I was just like, we went to Croatia a couple of years. It was, I think, 2000. I'm not remember when exactly when it was, 12 or something like that. And I was like, man, why am I not using this? Because, like, nobody's Croatian. And my cousin found the theme song that I use. And I was like, dude, this is amazing. And he was like, this is good music, right? And I was like, dude, this is entrance music. So eventually that was how everything went, was because I heard the song and I was like picturing an entrance. And then it was just like, everything just started kind of snowballing. And then originally I made it was a soccer character because my father played soccer, and soccer's big in Croatia. I mean, with the World Cup and everything, you know? So that was kind of the character, was just a soccer player from Croatia. And then when I was with Pat Buck in the PWS, and he was the one that really made me the character of who I was, he's like, what if you were serious and what if you were like a shooter? Like, what if you were like, you know, like an MMA type, you know? And I was like, I never pictured that, because I was like, I'm 5'9", 200 pounds, you know? I was like, I'm not a monster or a beast. He's like, yeah, but you know, like, I think you can do it. So you're like, all right. And he really honed and created the character itself of what the Croatian was. But without Pat, it would have never taken off the way it did, because he was the one that really started the undefeated thing, and then they put the title on me, and it was all from Pat and Eric Pleska with PWS. So without the two of them, it would have never taken off. So I would have never even had the confidence to do it, but Pat gave me that. So I'm always very grateful for Pat for that. But yeah, then it just kind of evolved, you know. It was my father when my father used to drink. So when my father was drunk, that was pretty much the intense character. Getting red in the face and getting angry and things like that. So all those little things add up over time. But yeah, that's how it all came about, really. I said it's my real heritage, it's my real name. Everything is real. It's just like, kind of, they always say you got to be a version of yourself with the volume turned up. So I just took my dad and turned it up, you know, like, so he was super proud of that. I was using our name and, you know, his name and the Croatian flag. Like, I was the first guy to carry the flag on national TV. So that was a big deal. So for them, awesome. At the same time too, like, you know, like, you want to do right by the country. So you try to just do the best you can. So, but yeah, that's how it came about.
Well, you definitely did that. I know when we first saw you on Impact, and Greg immediately definitely stood out to us.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about Pat Buck. You know, he obviously, everybody knows he went up to the WWE as a producer. Mm-hmm. You know, as we were talking before we started recording, I've been listening to his podcast for years.
Yeah.
You know, he's got one of his minds for wrestling.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I always said that too. But I said, Pat, even when we were doing PWS and the way things were going, he always had a great mind for wrestling, the way he did everything and coaching. And like, I had a really bad neck injury, and I think it was like 2010 to 11. I had an accident at work on top of all the wrestling over 10 years. And I had two discs in my neck and two in my lower back that were herniated so bad they were hitting nerves. So I was basically losing feeling in my right hand, from my right hand down to my right toes. The whole right side of my body was kind of like going away. And I had an accident at work where I fell off a ladder. So I was drilling a 4-inch hole through concrete. I was on like my fourth hole for the day. And the drill bit got caught in rebar and I spun off. It was like a big Bosch 80-pound drill. And I got caught and I spun off the drill bit spun. The drill spun, threw me off the ladder and I hit like the beams on the top up there. So then like a week and a half later, I was at work and I was trying to drill a simple little tiny like 1/4-inch pilot hole. And my hand just, I couldn't make a grip. I couldn't grip the drill. It would just open up and release. So I'd wake up in the middle of the night and both my arms were like pins and needles. Like every hour or two, I'd wake up and both of my arms were basically locked tight. And were, you know, like if you get a dead arm or a dead hand, you got to shake it out if you're like laying on it too long. That was basically both of my arms from the shoulder down on both sides. So eventually I had like 5 epidural procedures where they had to put you out. So I was out for like a whole year and a half with all that. And that was pretty hard with that. And then I ended up running into Pat at an ACE show and he was handing out flyers and he was like, "Hey, I'm thinking about opening up a school." He's like, "If you ever want to come down." And I was like, you know how people say like, "Yeah, I'll take you up on that offer. I'll, you know, I'll see you." Yeah. And I was like, "I'm telling you, I'm definitely going to take you up on that." So once he opened up near, I think it was Metuchen. I think they first opened Metuchen at the rec. I think it was Metuchen. No, he was first. It was in the rec center. Then Hurricane Sandy happened. And then we had to go to Metuchen. And it was like an ice rink. And then we came back to Rahway. So I was with him. And then after I went by him, it was like structured training again. Like nowhere else I went was training the way he was training. And he was training like we trained in OVW because Pat was there too. Pat went down and he was in the advanced class. He was in everything. Like he's always just been that way. Like he has that saying, like Buck never stops. Like, bro, he never stops. Like, and he never did. Like he was always just, he's one of the hungriest guys I've ever met. And at the same time too, he tried like everything all the time. And it was just like, he always kept telling no, or that he was running through the motions, or he didn't have enough character, or he didn't have enough emotion, or he didn't have enough skill, or he didn't have this, he didn't have that. And he just never stops, dude. He never did. He never quit. He's an inspiring person for me too. I mean, it's just like no matter what, like he, by hook or by crook, he made it there. You know what I mean? Like whatever it was, he made it. So that was how I kind of started with him, and then eventually I was coaching there, and covering some classes and helping people out, and you know, at the same time I was training myself, and then coaching was always a big deal because I coached in OVW. I coached the beginners class for a few months right before I tore my ACL down there, which is how I ended up leaving OVW. So, but before then, I was a coach of the beginners class for about 4 or 5 months. And that was where I first started coaching. And that was where I got like the real itch for coaching. Like I really enjoyed it. So I basically just did like RIPS class in a slower paced way. Because RIP was like, your job is to get them ready for my class. He goes, so when they show up in my class, he goes, they need to be able to fit right in and keep us moving. We can't be stopping for them. Because I guess previous beginner's class, teachers would just teach whatever they wanted. So guys would come into class and they had no idea what the drills were or no idea what we were doing. So I basically just did RIPS class slower with them. And we had this one drill high spot, and I was doing it with the beginner's class, and it's a pretty advanced drill. And people were amazed that the beginner's guys were doing that drill. I was like, well, Rip just told me to do Rip told me to do it, so that I'm just doing this, you know, like I'm just kind of doing what I was told. So, but apparently I was good at it, and people you know, from then on I was coaching at WrestlePro for 6 years. I was probably with Pat for like 7 years between PWS and WrestlePro, where I was coaching. I was basically assistant coach right behind him. So
that's awesome. So what are some of the best lessons you learned on the road with people?
Some of the best lessons I've learned on the road. One of them was always at least me and Russ always had a, cause we used to go down to Delaware. So we had a 5-mile rule where when we would leave the show, we had about 5 miles to talk about anything bad that happened. Like if something was bad or if something was this or something was that, we had like a 5-mile rule. Once that 5 miles were up, so you couldn't bitch about anything anymore. Like that was it. Like it just, you know, like it's done, it's over. there's nothing you can do about it. You know, you just make the best of it. So that was one lesson I learned from Russ was, we always said to it, you got to make the best of a bad situation and then just bitch about it later. That's all you can do. Cause, you know, there's a lot of bad that comes through a lot of stuff too, but you know, you learn, especially when you're young, you're learning the ropes. You're driving 3 hours for a hamburger and a hot dog and a handshake, and you know, you're not making money, but you know, biggest thing too, I always tell people, you got to go to work the next day, you know, unless this is your job, even still, like you have to be careful. Like it's just, injuries have plagued my career. Injuries have just completely, which is where I'm at. And now, which is why I'm at now, most of the time, every time something was going, an injury seemed to creep up and, you know, just puts a halt on everything. Everything stops. But I'd crack a rib and I'd go to work the next day and you're like, it's horrible. You know, and then if you tear a leg, you can't do nothing. So it's like, you know, you really got to be careful. This isn't like protecting yourself and protecting your opponent is like most important thing. I'm always telling people when I train or kids when I was training that safety is the most important thing. So I don't need anybody getting hurt on my watch either. So, and things are going to happen. There's just nothing you can do. It's, you know, it's a contact sport. Things are going to happen, but there's ways you can avoid it without being stupid and not being careless or reckless, you know. But you just make the best of it too, being on the road. It's, you know, sometimes that's the fun part. Traveling in a car with guys for 15 hours, like, you just have to make a good time out of it. Those are the things you remember, is like the memories and things that you did. But I always say, just got to be safe. That's the big important thing for me, was safety first. Because I've seen it all go away. And you never know when your next match is your last one. I didn't even know my last match was my last one. It might be my last one for good. You know, like, I don't know, but you never know. Wrestling can get taken away from you very fast. And it's happened to me a couple times. And it's like, especially now with all this Corona stuff, when everybody's like, everybody lost wrestling. It's like, bro, welcome to my world. I'm like, I lost this shit fucking 5-6 times already. And you never know. I don't even know if it's going to come back this time, but you know, that's you just got to be grateful for every day that you have, every match that you have, and just try to make the best of it. Like, it was supposed to be fun. Like, we did this because it was fun. You know, when it stops being fun, or, you know, like, you gotta make a decision. Eventually, for me, it was just like, right now, things were just like, it just, I'd get out of the matches and my body was just in so much pain, and like, things were just, I was looking at quality of life. Like, I'm gonna be 40 this year. You know, I started wrestling when I was 19, so I'm worried about the next 5 to 10 years moving forward, because, you know, so right now I'm kind of recouping and healing things up. But you know, last year I had a couple bad concussions in the span of about 4 or 5 matches in a row. I hit my head pretty good. Yeah, I hit my head pretty good in a few of them. So it was that was ultimately what kind of stopped me last year when I had my last one. So, but so I don't know how things are going to go in the future. But right now it's like, you know, it's taking one day at a time. That's all you can do. I'm grateful for all the stuff that I've done already. So, you know, I look back and there's a lot of stuff that I did. So at the same time too, I might not have gotten where I wanted to get, but I still got to do a lot more than most people. I always just wanted to be a wrestler. So I did that. So
certainly did.
Definitely. So I got to ask this. Did you ever take a long car trip with Gino?
What's that?
Did you ever take a long car trip with Gino Caruso?
Oh God. Yes.
Yeah. Are his stories real? I took a ride with him, my brother, and Ace Wild up to Binghamton, and he talked for 3 hours telling stories. And I literally, the first thing I said when I got out of the car to my brother quietly was, is that real? And my brother's like, I'm going to assume it is.
I guess it depends on what stories he's telling, but a lot of the stuff that we talked about, yeah, we remember one trip we went down to Mississippi. This was like one of my first big road trips. We went to Mississippi, and Kodiak Bear was driving. Metal Maniac was in a van. I was in the van. Gino was in the van. Andrew Anderson was in the van. I think Russ was in the van. I'm trying to think who else was there. Those are the names right off the bat I know. And it was like 28-hour drive. Like, it was ridiculous. And they're buying, like, beef jerky and all these things that basically are going to make Gino fart. So he's basically, like, gassing out the van while we're driving. And we're like, dude, like, his pork rinds, you know, beef jerky, whatever else he could get his hands on. And he's just ripping in the van the whole way down. I remember right as we left, Metal Maniac was in the front seat with Bear. Bear was driving, and he goes. So I want to play a game. We're like, okay. And he was like, let's play a game called Maniac's a Cunt Because. And then you would fill in the blank of why he was a cunt. And pardon my language, but that was like, so right off the bat, we literally just turned out of the school parking lot, bam, right on the road. And Bear wants to play this game. So Maniac goes, oh, brother, if this is the way it's going to be, pull over right now. And so Bear pulls the van over. And like screeching, pulls it right over, and he goes, "This is the way it's going to be the entire way down." He goes, "So unless you don't want to sit here," he's like, "then you can get the fuck out." And it was like, he's like, "Oh, come on, brother, blah blah blah." And he's like, "No," he's like, "this is just the way it's going to be." So we were all sitting there, like, for real, like, we're sitting there waiting for them to, like, for Maniac to jump out, and then finally we kept going. Bear was like, "This is it. It's just the way it's going to be." So Bear ragged on him pretty much the whole way down, but Kodiak Bear was hysterical. I learned a lot from him coming up with Gino. But that was even another trip where I ended up waking up on I ended up waking up kind of spooning with Andrew Anderson. I woke up and my head was on his hip and he was laying against the window. We like woke up and we looked at each other and we were like, oh well. We just went back to bed. It was a long car ride. But yeah, man, those are those things. Like, once I did it, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. Like, I'm never going to do that again. But we had some fun. We had some fun trips, some fun shows. Even when I saw Gino before I came down, for the last time I saw him, we were just reminiscing about stories and things like that. But like Rip always said, he goes, those are the things that you remember. You don't. There's matches I've had that I don't even remember. People send me a clip of it or a tape of it, and I see something else. I don't even remember it. It's like watching a match for the first time sometimes. But you remember all those crazy stories and things that you did.
Absolutely. Who are some of your favorite opponents? Obviously Ross, but who else?
Ooh. I've already got to say, first and foremost, it's got to be Dan Moff. He's like, I recently just had, I was just talking with him about it, because we had a series of matches in Ace for Mike Morgan, where that really kind of, a lot of those matches kind of, they're like some of my proudest moments. And then I've had matches with him in PWS too, and WrestlePro all along the way. We did a hardcore match with me, Fala, and Moff. We did two of them that were like two of my all-time favorites. Most of my matches from Ace with him are favorites. I told him, he's like my all-time greatest opponent. He's like my Steamboat to my Flair, you know, or my Brett to my Shawn, or my Hogan to my Warrior, or, you know, like any kind of feud, like he's my all-time top guy. Like, I remember watching him on the first Ring of Honor show. I watched the first DVD Ring of Honor. The first match was the Hit Squad against, I think it was like Christopher Street Connection. It might have been. But I remember seeing, that was the first time I ever saw Dan Moff, and I remember thinking I never wanted to wrestle him, because he looked like he was murdering people, and at the same time too, I was just like, there's just no way, like, you could hang with a guy like that. And being able to work with him and do what I've done with him is like a real honor, because there's nobody like him. I don't care what anybody says, or like, he's got to be like one of the all-time greatest on the independents alone, and for his age and what he's still doing now. I'm so happy that Ring of Honor picked him up, because he deserves to be on a national stage more than probably anybody I've ever met. So, like, he's my all-time greatest opponent. Like, he's my best friend. He's a great person. He's a mentor to so many people. But he's like my ultimate guy. Like, he's my all-time favorite person. My body does not like him because there's matches where I finished and I felt like I got hit by a truck when I've gotten done with him. But ultimately, he's given me the top matches of my career. So I recently have gotten to work with Orange Cassidy last year, and I wrestled him before he was Orange Cassidy as Fire Ant too. So he was like, "You're one of the only guys that you're one of the few guys that got to wrestle me as both people." So he's just awesome because he's just an awesome person too. But wrestling him as Orange Cassidy is just like, it's so easy. Like, it's amazing. it's so great. Man, Russ was always a big one. Johnny Thunder in ECPW. Andrew Anderson too. I had so many good matches with Drew when we were coming up. Jay Lethal when I was an Ace. I had really good matches with him. Rob Vegas, Mike Donovan and Ace. We had really good matches. Guys from WrestlePro. I liked working with Matt McIntosh. Bobby Wayward's awesome to work with. I wrestled Crowbar a lot. Crowbar's great. I'm trying to get as many people in as possible because it's, you know, there's been so many too, and I just want to at least give them the recognition that they deserve because I've really had some good matches with them. Man, trying to think who else. I'm probably forgetting people already, but there's not much I can. I've been hit in the head a lot. But yeah, those are some of my all-time favorite people to work on a consistent basis. At least were those guys. Fala was always great to work with, teaming and, you know, doing anything like that. And we've wrestled each other too, so, which is good. Yeah, man, it's like, I don't know. There's a lot of students I've had really good matches with too across the years that from training and stuff. So those were happy thoughts. But yeah, those I think that's I'm probably forgetting people, but I'm trying to get as many in as I could. So those I think that's all I got for now. But if I think of anything else off the top of my head, I'll let you know. But Moth is definitely, like I said, Moth's number one. He's always going to be.
He looks like a killer in his matches. It's awesome watching him go.
Oh yeah, every match he has is just like, it's great, you know. And then everybody, I've never seen more people so honored and feel privileged and so happy and so proud. Like, I can't tell you how many people I've seen come backstage and just start crying after matches with Moth. Students, like, you know, there's dozens and dozens of people that are going to tell you the greatest match they ever had was with Dan Moth. And that's probably the best compliment you can have is when I've had a lot of people too, you know, tell you, they said, man, I've had some of my best matches with you. That's like a badge of honor that you wear. You know what I mean? Like, you want,
definitely.
You want people to, you want it to feel different when they got out of the match with you and, you know, feel like that they've learned something and that they've, you know, they start to see it in a different way. So, but yeah, man, Dan Moth is the man.
Who are some of the top young guys in that Jersey area that we should keep our eyes out for?
Top young guys in the Jersey area. Like I said, from WrestlePro alone, I said Bobby Wayward. Right now, he's helping coach as well in Creative Pro New Jersey. From there, WrestlePro alone, Matt McIntosh is crazy athletic too, and he really has done a good job over the last year or two of really getting himself out there and making a name for himself. And he really like hit the ground running and was getting booked everywhere and winning championships. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for him too because he was a guy that came from Geno's. I worked him in Geno's as well. Geno was like, I got this young kid. He's like, he's really good. And, I think he's going to be something good. And I worked a match with him at the Paramus Elks Lodge. And we were both young. And this was before I was even doing the Croatian character. And I did stuff with him that I could only do with certain people because they have to be athletic enough to do it and have the ring stamina and the wind to go. And I did some spots with him. And, you know, I'm really proud of where he's come from, where he started to. And he came over to WrestlePro. And he was champion there for a long time last year, a year before that. So I'm really, really happy, proud of him, and just like happy for him for all his success. Hopefully it keeps continuing. Nikos Rikos is another guy from WrestlePro that's just sky's the limit for him. He came in and just like got it, like off the bat. Like he just kind of got it. And he just gets better in time. Anthony Bowens from WrestlePro too he's the champion now. He's the gold champion. He's got such a following too now, with the LGBT community.
Q. Yeah.
He had come out a couple of years ago, I think, and he's gotten such a following now. So, I mean, we were all just like, okay, so what? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like we love you, bro, no matter what. So just do you. Like he was afraid that, you know, people were gonna judge him or think anything. We were like, bro, do you, man. That's just you. So just do it. We love you no matter what you are. So but he's gained such an amazing following, like on Instagram, and he's gotten like over 100,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel. So I really hope something big comes through for him in the near future. Sean Donovan at WrestlePro, he's not a young guy. He's a veteran, but he's really upped his game since he came there too. He's coaching now. He kind of took over my reins when I had gotten injured and stuff, with the knee injuries and the concussion injuries and things like that. So he teamed with Moff, and so I'm really happy with the way he's just kind of upped his game moving forward. Like I said, he's not one of the younger guys, but he's a veteran. But he's still going. He's got plenty of miles left on the car. So, JT Dunn was another guy that I'm just like, man, he was more over on some shows that I couldn't even believe it. Working with him was always awesome. JT's just a great guy too. I hope in the future something big happens for him. And like I said, he's not really a younger guy because he's been doing this for a long time, but he deserves to be somewhere too, because I think he's just super talented. He's another guy that makes people better when he gets in the ring. Man, I'm trying not to just put over WrestlePro guys, but
it's okay.
There's a lot of guys in Creative Pro New York too that are just really really talented.
We're really just asking, like you just gave us like lists of people we're gonna reach out to for interviews, so it's fine. Okay. Like you're programming the show.
I've already invited three or four of them, but okay. I'm positive in the inbox it says request and nobody clicks on the request.
Okay, we'll put my name on it. Requested by or referred by. And I'm sure you'll get a response by at least the WrestlePro guys.
So I got to ask you my token question that I ask all our guests, because we are we're an old school podcast on our regular days, and you're in our age bracket. So I'm really curious about this one.
Okay, cool.
This is nice. Right. So, you know, we're all in this boat of quarantine and things like that. What's your, if you had a match or an event that you could just click on and watch either on YouTube or the network or anything like that, that's like your guilty pleasure match or something that you just can always go back to and see, what would it be?
Oh man. Oh wow. that's tough. There's so many things, but that's tough. You're looking at like all time favorite matches. Is that
just,
like,
whatever. Anything that
or
you can say,
or...
it doesn't matter. Anything that you can remember that you can just go back to and be like, I can watch this all the time.
Wow. Oh man, that's tough.
I'm sorry.
No, recently I watched the it was the second One Night Stand, ECPW One Night Stand. When okay. I mean ECW ECPW One Night
Stand. It's okay. We've been talking about them for an hour. It's fine.
Yeah. The ECW One Night Stand, where I think it was Angle wrestled with Randy Orton on that one. He changed to like the wrestling machine.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Van Dam wrestled John Cena on that one.
Was that the champion when RVD won the title?
Yes. Also, I think it was Eddie Guerrero wrestled Chris Benoit on that one. I'm a guilty Benoit fan. I've always been. I always was. I think one match of that was one of my all times was Angle and Benoit from the Royal Rumble, the one where Lesnar won the Rumble. It was going into WrestleMania 19, whatever year that was. That's one of my favorite
2003-ish.
The 2003 to 2005-ish is one of my go-tos because that's like Eddie, Angle, Benoit. I mean, Guerrero's my all-time. Like, he's my top. He's my top, hands down. Who's your favorite of all time? It's Eddie Guerrero, hands down. But I was always a big Angle, Benoit, Guerrero fan. Like, those were my three guys, like, where I always tried to kind of mold most of my style off of. 2005 is a good year in wrestling. 2003 to 2005 is always a really good year.
Yeah.
Another one of my favorite matches is Sasha Banks versus Bayley from TakeOver Brooklyn. To me, that's like, this is like one of the hottest crowds, one of just the best story told matches. Like, doesn't matter if you're male, female, like that was just like hands down one of my favorite matches, like of all time too. I could watch that match over and over again.
So that's what I was looking for, man. That's like that. You're good. You don't have to come up.
You're good.
Come up. Bring it on. It's fine. But like, it's so funny you said that. Like those years, I was just talking to somebody on like thinking today somebody tweeted something and it was like how 2002 was such a whack year to me. Cause like everything happened. Like all this, all these guys, like Batista, Orton, Cena, Lesnar all debuted.
Yeah.
You know, you had Michaels coming back. You had the first draft. You had the WWF became WWE, and it was that Triple H's return. It's like all in one. That's within like the first 6 months of the year. And you know, we were fortunate enough. We got to go to like two pay-per-views that year that were both in New York, and like enjoyed every second of that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, when you say those years, those were prime years for us. Cause we were like old enough, like we were drinking age and able to like go like, just, hey, you know, you want to go? And you know, we went to WrestleMania in 2004 and we got to go to all this stuff. Those were great times.
Yeah. One of my favorite pay-per-views too is the thing was, might've been 2003 or 2004. It was SummerSlam where Brock versus Rock.
That was 2002. That was, we were there.
That was what, Nassau?
Yep.
That Nassau? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That whole pay-per-view, dude, was like Angle and Mysterio like tore it up.
They opened, didn't they? I think they opened.
And that was one of the best 10-minute matches I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then it was like Flair versus Jericho.
Yep.
Rock versus Brock. That was Michael's match where he came back.
Yep.
Like, that pay-per-view was stacked with so many stars and like great matches. It's like that was one I could watch all the time.
It's so, that one was so good. I remember, like, if I could tell a quick story how we got our tickets to that. We got up early, Chris and I, we drove out to the island to like wait online, and we got there like super early and the line was just stupid. Like it was the line was to like Jones Beach. Like we were like, it was like, oh, screw this. Yeah. So then like we're online calling Ticketmaster while standing online. And the guy behind us online was like, hey, I got through, but I don't want him. Do you, here? He handed me his phone and we ordered our tickets from some other dude's phone that got through. And we were like right off. We were in like the second deck, but right off the stage, right? Like we were right up. Yeah. We were sitting right on the stage. So it was like, it was so cool because that's when The Undertaker was doing like the biker gimmick and he rode out and we watched him like ride the bike backstage because it was kind of open from where we were. It was hilarious. But that was a fun time, man. Like, absolutely. I love that show. That was the first pay-per-view I ever went to.
Really? Oh, yeah. That was a good one, dude. That one like goes down.
Mm-hmm.
History like is an all time, like that's a great one.
Yeah. And then later that year, Survivor Series was at the Garden, and that
I was there.
You were there.
Yeah.
That's the loudest. I've been to Nick playoff games, Ranger playoff games, concerts, WrestleMania 20. That's the loudest I ever heard that building.
Wait, no, Survivor Series in the Garden of that year. No, that was when Scott Steiner came back.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dude, that's one of the all-time like biggest pops I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even really find that on like YouTube. Like I've Googled it because I love to search like just all-time biggest pops.
Mm-hmm.
Like I love just pops like Dolph Ziggler cashing in Money in the Bank, one of the biggest.
So mad we missed that.
Oh, dude, one of the biggest pops. Another one was. Mick Foley winning the title when Stone Cold comes back.
Oh yeah,
the match with The Rock on Raw,
mm-hmm.
the one where they gave away the finish. All time, that to me, that's the all time biggest pop I've ever heard. Was when Austin's music hits and he comes out, smacks Rock with the chair, gets out, 1, 2, 3, boom! Like that's like just
one that always comes to my mind was when it was like a random Raw and Jericho beat Triple H for the title,
yes.
and
yes.
they reversed the decision.
Yep,
that is one of the. That is enormous.
Lion Salt, fast count, 1, 2, 3.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I jumped. I remember, like, I was, you know, we were like, what, 18, 19 when that happened? And I jumped out of my seat at home. Like, I remember where I was.
Yep. I remember like, that. Because I'm like, when were you born?
80. Chris is 80. Chris is December 80. I'm August 81.
Wait, December 80?
Yep.
So am I. December 2nd, 1980.
26.
There you go.
Yeah, man. That's what I'm saying. You got me by 24 days.
So that's why, like, that's why it's so funny. Like, you're our age. So, like, that's why it's, like, fun, like, to talk about this. Because we would talk to a couple of guys on the show, and they were like, oh, this match in, like, 2010 is, like, my first memory. And we're like, oh, my God. It makes you feel.
No.
I was like, can you just, like, get. We're recording this from like the rest home. Like it just makes you feel so old.
Yeah. People always ask me too. They go, what's your first memory of wrestling? The first member I remember watching wrestling was the main event where Hogan wrestled Andre and there was the two Hebners.
Yep.
Where they did this. That was the first time I ever saw wrestling because I remember cause my dad was watching it and I was watching it. And then I was like, I think 8 or something, because it was like 1987.
87, yeah.
Yeah.
So like I was 6 or 7.
Right. And I was like, that was way past my bedtime. So I ended up falling asleep in the middle of the match because I was like, you know, I don't stay up that late. And remember the next morning, I asked my dad, I said, who won? And he goes, Andre. And I was like, no, he didn't. And he's like, well, what do you mean? Yes, he did. He's like, I watched it. And I'm like, I was like so offended that he won. You know what I mean? Like I was like arguing with him, like a 7-year-old arguing with my father about it. And he's like, no. So then I had to go back and see how it happened. So eventually I found some kind of tape of something. And that was it, dude. After that, I was hooked.
Yeah.
I was hooked. And then I found all these tapes at Blockbuster and everything. So
Blockbuster always had a fine selection.
Yeah. Friday night, picking up a wrestling VHS and a video game. And bag of chips.
That was like me in high school, man. Like after high school, I worked at a pizza place, and like it was Friday nights. I'd come home with like a pizza and stop at Blockbuster and like just find like the nearest wrestling tape and get it.
Yeah.
And then Chris and his brother had the black box. So Sunday night pay per views. That was my admission. Yeah. I had to bring like fried raviolis and pizza over, and I could watch the shows.
The illegal cable box.
I don't know what you're talking about. My family never committed any crimes.
Yeah, we all had that. Fine.
I always had one friend that had it.
You had the scrambled like Playboy Channel.
I learned which button that was.
Yeah, man. That's good shit right there.
Wow. Now, did you watch ECW growing up, too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. I watched everything. I watched WCW Saturday nights. I watched Power Hours in the morning, whatever. ECW Saturday night when I could find it. I would watch that. I really didn't even know when it was on. I had an idea, but I would always eventually just catch it. But, yeah, dude, I watched everything.
Yeah, he used to sleep over to watch it.
Yeah, I just always remembered, like, I was thinking, like, like wrestling in general, like when I watched ECW, I was like, this is real. I was just like, there's no pulling punches here. I was like, they're just killing each other. So
that was one of those. ECW is one of those things where it was just like as a teenager, that was like, you know, like the. Like your war of attrition to stay awake to watch it.
Yeah.
Like you thought you felt like such a badass. Like, oh man, I was able to stay awake for ECW last night. Like,
yeah, that was one. I never went to a WCW event, and I never went to an ECW event, and I wished that I had gone, because especially ECW at the time, because that was just like some of the loudest reactions I had ever heard.
We did.
Like when Taz and RVD got in the ring, and the lights came up, and Taz was there, and like Sabu. When Sabu showed up, and Taz was across the ring. I love Taz. Taz was the big influence, too, when I started doing the character. Like, it was kind of like a combination of Kurt Angle and Taz. That was what a lot of people were getting off the character, so, which was like... And when we did PWS, like, Eric was a big ECW fan, so a lot of the things were like, he was like, you're my Taz. So it was like, okay, you know, like, and then it was like, everybody had, like, their kind of niche in it, so I think that was part of the success was, too, because it was like, you know, he's like, you're my Taz role. So I was like, all right, cool, I'll play it. I'll do it. I love Taz. Taz was awesome. When he showed up, too, what was that, when he wrestled?
Royal Rumble 2000.
Yeah, dude, that was another one, dude. Like, biggest pops, like, huge. Like, so awesome. Like, you saw all these guys on ECW, too, like RVD and Jericho and Eddie and Malenko and all those guys. And when they came up and they showed up somewhere, like, you felt like you were smart or you were something, because, like, you already knew who they were.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you felt like you were a true fan, you know? Like, I was happy to see those guys. I'm like, I already know who you are. I know who you are.
Yeah, my ECW guy was always Jerry Lynn.
Love Jerry Lynn. He was another guy I got to wrestle with, Ace. He was awesome. Super great guy. Jerry Lynn was great. He really was. He's another guy that didn't get as much as he should have.
Yeah.
He went far, but I mean, he did a lot, but he's another one of those guys where you were just like, man, he's just a good dude, too. Like, just a really good dude.
It almost seemed like he was a little bit before it was acceptable to have the smaller champions.
Yeah. Just
a little bit too early. If he had come a little bit later, I think he would have reached that pinnacle.
Yeah. I did a seminar with him at the – I used to go to seminars all the time. I was always going still to seminars, no matter how many years I was in, just because I was like, if you pick up one thing from somebody in a seminar, it's worth it, like, no matter who they are. Sometimes it was just you were hearing things that you already knew, and it was like just kind of justification that, oh, at least I know what's going on. But you never knew what you could pick up. And plus, it's just making connections. You don't know who you're going to see when you're there. You don't know where that person is going to be next time you show up somewhere. You know, like, it's just, I always encourage everybody, as go to as many seminars as you can go to. Because that's where I started, too. We went to Dr. Tom seminars. We went to Al Snow. Anything we could get our hands on, I was going to a seminar at all times. And that's where eventually I ended up meeting Pat, too, for the first time. But Pat Buck was at a Dr. Tom seminar. And then years later, he's like my boss. You know, like, and trainer. It's like, it's crazy. But, yeah, Jerry Lynn, I remember he always said, too, he goes, you're working to have that match where you get done. And at that night, you can't sleep. And you're up till 5 a.m. just replaying the match over and over again in your head. And I'm like, man, I had so many nights like that where you just, like, you got out of a match and all you did was just think about the whole thing over and over again. You'd ride a good match for like 2 weeks, you know. You'd be high on a match for even that. Then was in the next week you had another one. So it was like if you did it, you know you'd be riding high for that whole week, you know. And he goes, that's what we're all chasing, that high, the high, the adrenaline high off of the match. When you have those matches, he goes, and then you're looking to get it again and again. That's like basically what it is. It becomes like a drug. You just like, you want it more and more. It's like, there's no better feeling. It really was. Like Edge said it too. He goes, if you could bottle that and sell it, you'd be a millionaire. Cause it's like, just no better feeling. There's none, really not.
So I don't know about you, Greg, but my biggest takeaway is the first show we go to after all this stuff is done is WrestlePro.
Sure. Like, yeah, man. Like,
it's fairly local, and
I'm just like, that's the thing. It's like, you're just in such cabin fever right now that, yeah, we'll go to like whatever. That sounds great to me. I don't
care. Honestly, dude, I don't think you'll be disappointed at all with WrestlePro. Like, it's just from, when I started there too, just training and stuff, I got Moff to come down there too, because I said there's just something different about here. There's just something special. But the shows are really, like, no matter how many people they have there, some shows are better than others. You're not going to sell at every show, no matter what. There's just things that sometimes, you know, come in the way. But there's just, I've never left a practice there, and I've never left the show that where I was like, well, this was a waste of my time, you know, or this wasn't worth it. Like, I always said that they're some of the best independent shows, especially in New Jersey, but it's just, they're fun, man. There's just so many people that do it. It's fun. Wrestling's supposed to be fun, and they make it fun too. So there's nobody to Kevin Matthews and Pat Buck that really, you know, they live it. They you know, they book it and they live the whole thing. So it's, you know, they really do. They put on a great show. Every show is something for everybody at every show. So definitely check it out, no matter what whatever the next one is that shows up. I think it's going to be in Rahway, hopefully.
That's definitely not far from us. That's an easy drive.
No, dude, it's worth it. Rahway is always worth it. Rahway is like the garden for us.
Yeah.
We've always said it. It's like our Madison Square Garden. Yeah. There's so many matches we've had in WrestlePro where we're somewhere else and we go, man, you know, I wish that was in Rahway. I wish that match was in Rahway.
Oh, that's awesome. We can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. This has been probably the most fun conversation we've had.
Oh, definitely. Cool, man. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. No, I love talking wrestling. I never shut up. I don't get to talk wrestling too often with people. So when I do again, it's fun.
This is great, man. And, you know, we really appreciate you being on the show with us. You know, we definitely hope we could stay in touch with you, and, you know, hopefully when you get healed up, if you get back in the ring, let us know and we'll be there.
Support. Yeah, man,
definitely be there.
Definitely keep in touch no matter what. I said I'll do pay-per-view reviews if you want. Like, I do anything. Someone else told me about that too. They said we'll review a pay-per-view. I was like, sure, no problem.
That's what we do.
Holding you to. Our old school podcast to the T.
Yeah,
dude, just message me. Let me know. I'm always down to talk wrestling.
All right, definitely.
Definitely.
Definitely. I'm gonna save your number. You called before. I'll make sure that we keep in touch, and we'll get you on for that, without a doubt. Yeah,
absolutely.
Maybe we'll bring my brother in too.
That's
we'll
what I was. I was just about to say that.
Definitely bring Zudo up.
Definitely. All right, man. Well, plug your social media, get out everything you want to the fans.
Everything I have is straight up under Mario Bucara. It's my first name, Mario, and it's the underscore. And then Bucara. I have Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm not really on as much as I used to be, just because, like, as far as mental health, it seems to work better for me too sometimes, just to kind of you need to just go off grid for a little while sometimes, and it's not so bad. But currently I live in Florida, so I'm in Tampa, Florida actually right now.
Oh, nice.
So I'm not actually in quarantine as much as New Jersey and New York is. So
yeah.
I get to go on walks down by the beach and take a lot of pictures of sunsets and stuff, and I work and go for bike rides and stuff, so it's all good.
Awesome.
Hopefully everybody will be out there soon, though. But like I said, I don't know what the future holds, but just take it one day at a time, see what happens. But yeah, you can find me on social media. Like I said, just search my name and it'll pop up no matter what you're on, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram.
Once again, a huge thanks to Mario Bucara for hanging out with us here on the Indie Lounge. As always, you can follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at DDT Archives. You can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris_DDTHSLB. And remember to subscribe to the program on iTunes and give us that 5-star rating. Spread the word, tell your friends, and we'll see you on Wednesday on the flagship show, the DDT Archives, as we cover the great rivalry between Sting and the great Muta. Thanks again, everybody. Have a great day.